This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 49, ALCS Preview, recorded on October 12th, 2016. Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast. As always, with your host, me, Matt Lyons, and Jason Lucart. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Sweeping the Red Sox, ending the career of David Ortiz, home field in the ALCS. Yeah, I'd say I'm doing well.
It's hard to pick which one of those is the best right now. I mean, I don't hate David Ortiz, but we've talked about it before. I just hate the whole yearly celebration thing. And it's finally over. The Indians ended it. Hooray for us. And clinched in Boston, which is always fun. Clinching in the opposing city's team. Or the opposing team's city.
Yeah, things have gone well since last we spoke.
I don't know why I'm just now thinking of this. But if you clinch on a sweep, you're always going to do it in the other team's city, right? In a 5 or 7 game series?
If you had home field.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you have to have home field to do that. Otherwise, it'd be in yours. That makes sense. Yeah, anyway, yes.
You'll always be on the lower seeds field for a sweep.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Anyway, on the actual important things, like you said, a lot of good things happened since the last time we talked. We almost timed it perfectly. We're just off by a couple days because last time we did a recording, of course, was on Monday before the ALDS. Now we're recording after it. And, of course, in game one, the Indians won 5-4. That was a nail biter. I don't think I breathed through that whole game. Game two was a little bit different. The Indians blew out the Red Sox. And game three was also close, but I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of worry there because they were up 2-0. But we'll talk about it a little more. It came down right to the wire there, too. So what stuck out for you between those three games?
I think, you know, what stuck out for a lot of people was the bullpen usage. Terry Francona was not shy about going to his bullpen, going to Andrew Miller really early in game one. And, you know, there was some talk that, you know, a lot of that was not wanting Bauer to go too deep because they were planning to bring him back on short rest for game four. And I don't doubt that did play into it. But I think a lot of it is he just felt like, you know, we got to go for this. And Andrew Miller's our best pitcher. This is the time to bring him in. At the time, I wasn't sure it was the time to bring him in just because the bases were empty and there was two outs. But Miller pitched 2 innings. Allen pitched, you know, got 5 guys out. So your 2 best relief pitchers pitching almost 4 full innings isn't something that happens a lot. Your best relief pitcher coming into the 5th inning is not something that happens a lot. And then in a lot of ways, game three was really similar to that. Tomlin lasted a little longer than Bauer, but same thing. You know, he went to his best relievers and went for a game that he thought was winnable. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the bullpen stuff. So, I mean, I'll let you weigh in. But for me, you know, the bullpen was the big thing. How about you?
Yeah, no, I have something else too. But the bullpen, I mean, we're all giving Terry Francona a ton of credit, but I don't think we're giving him enough credit. Because, I mean, it was brilliant the way he did it. And the fact that I don't really know how much you could do if he kind of tipped his hat he was going to do it. I don't know if you can really plan against somebody using their bullpen this well. But he kind of did it a couple times in the regular season. But he just, like, the pedal to the metal all out with the bullpen in the playoffs, which is really neat to see. Because, like you said, Andrew Miller coming in really soon. He pitched 4 innings total in 3 games, which was almost as much as every other starter, Boston starter. I think it was more than David Price. But it was more than David Price, the same as Clay Buchholz. Buchholz was 4.1 innings. Rick Porcello was exactly 4, I think, and David Price was 3.1. So Andrew Miller, just by himself, was better than every Boston starter. It's just amazing how well he used them all. And then Cody Allen, especially game three. Oh, man, I got really worried at the end. If one or two pitches don't go quite the way they do, are we talking about that he left Cody Allen in way too long? Because I was already having the idea in my head about, like, I probably wasn't going to write it, but just the fact that Terry Francona overthought it a little, leaving him in so long. You think that would have happened? It's just crazy how little things sort of change like that.
Closers just don't get pulled in that situation. You know, while the team still has the lead, I would love to see how many times this year, the guy who's seen as the closer for a team was pulled in a game while his team was still leading it. It's just not something that happens. But yeah, Allen looked shaky, walked a couple of guys in game three. And the Red Sox in the 8th inning, they only scored 1 run, but they were crushing everything. Every out they made was like 110 mile per hour screaming shot that, you know, was hit right at someone, or in one case was sort of close to Jose Ramirez, and he was able to make a nice play. They were murdering the ball late. So I wasn't worried about the whole series because, like you said at the top, the Indians were up 2-0 at that point. Losing wouldn't have been, you know, the end of the world. But I was not confident about that game at the end. And so, yeah, to me, Miller looked better than Allen, but Allen was plenty good. And, yeah, you know, those two, I think, pitched like a combined 7 innings in those 2 games. And that's one of the nice things about the postseason is with the extra days off, you can do something like that. You know, I wrote about how after game 1, Miller and Allen both threw 40 pitches, and it's not very often a reliever. I couldn't find a single instance of an Indians reliever coming back the day after throwing that many pitches, which isn't surprising because a reliever doesn't throw that many pitches that often. But even throwing 25 pitches, you don't see guys back that often. But in the postseason, you're going to get that day off pretty quickly. And I think Francona obviously understands all of that. And, you know, given that the starting rotation is so hamstrung right now, although obviously they did really well too, I mean, Francona is the right man for this job right now.
Yeah, definitely. I know you didn't quite agree, but just the fact that the extra day off and the rain delay, do you think you would have ridden the Cody Allen and Andrew Miller quite as hard in Game 3 if they didn't have that extra day, or did that really matter for the bullpen?
Yeah, I think he would have. I think, I mean, if anything, it meant that there wouldn't be a day off after Game 4 if it went that far. I don't think the extra day off, I mean, you know, a little more rest for Miller and Allen, I'm sure didn't hurt. And I didn't think the extra day off of rest hurt them for Game 3. I thought it hurt them if they lost Game 3. For the longer the series went, the more that postponement was going to work against them. But for Game 3, I didn't think it was an issue. But yeah, I mean, the big thing is if they had blown that lead in Game 3, you know, they still would have been up 2-1. But then you're coming back the next day, and Miller and Allen would both have thrown a ton of pitches. I don't know that either of them would have been available for more than maybe a batter or two in Game 4. So even though up 2-1 still would have been a good situation, it was a big relief to me just to sweep the series and not have to sweat out a Game 4 with the 2 best relievers potentially being on the shelf.
Yeah, weirdly enough, getting a sweep will calm your nerves pretty quickly. But outside of the relievers, thing for me, I don't think a whole lot of people talked about it, was Lindor. Towards the end of the season, he kind of broke out of his slump, but for a long time there, he was really bad. It looked just like fatigue or something. But in Game 1, he was 1-for-4 with a home run. Game 2, he was hitless. But Game 3, again, 2-for-4, no home runs. But he also did have, I don't remember if you remember, but I think it was Game 3, he had a pretty average play. A ball was hit to him. He caught it. He stepped on second, threw it to first. But the TBS announcers were just amazed by it. I think they were just looking for a reason to just say how great Lindor was. And there wasn't really many opportunities for him to make a play. But he finally made maybe a slightly above average difficulty one, and they were all fawning over him, which I'm okay. I'm all right with paying tribute to Lindor, but they got a little desperate there. Yeah, I think the only knock against Terry Francona I would have is it was weird when he didn't use Brandon Guyer in certain situations. I guess his decision to use Lindor or Chisenhall in Game 2 paid off because he homered, but there were other pinch hit opportunities where I think Guyer would have been good. But Terry,
yeah, there's the moment in Game 1 where Chisenhall was up. I don't know what inning off the top of my head right now. Maybe like the 6th inning. And Drew Pomeran was in for Boston. And It would have made sense to bring Guyer in. And when that was pointed out on Twitter and places like that, others were like, well, obviously then, you know, John Farrell is just going to go to the bullpen and bring in a righty. And it's like, well, yeah, that's true. But forcing him to take out, you know, getting further into the bullpen is a good thing. So, yeah, I was surprised by that. But, you know, Chisenhall hit the big home run in Game 2. Brandon Guyer also great in Game 2. So I agree there were a couple little things that were a little shaky, but nothing major. And even the little things that were a little shaky didn't end up hurting the team. And the big things, you know, paid off in such a huge way. The other guy for me who stood out offensively was Jose Ramirez, who had 1 or 2 hits in all 3 games. He was playing well already this season. I really feel like, and I don't have any numbers in front of me right now, and I haven't talked to Jose Ramirez, believe it or not, but I really feel like once he became the everyday third baseman, things really settled even in more for him. His defense at third base has looked better and better as the end of the season came along. A couple of really good plays. and his offense has been great. He's been, you know, he and Carlos Santana have been the team's two best hitters for the last, you know, 2+ months now, and he had a really good series. So he's another guy I would mention. And then I also am obligated to mention Coco Crisp, who many of us, most of us, almost all of us have sort of talked about, you know, not being much of a ball player at this point. And, you know, when he came up in the sixth inning of game three, I said something on Twitter about, because they bunted before he came up. And I was like, oh, yeah, anytime you can get a runner in scoring position for Coco Crisp, you got to do it. And a couple pitches later, boom, home run over the monster, you know, and that kind of broke that game open. So that was Coco. I love you.
It's the power of the Lukart curse, I'm telling you.
It can make good things happen, see?
And of course, before I get to the most important person in the series, obviously, you mentioned talking to Jose Ramirez. I don't remember if I brought this up on the podcast or not, but he blocked Let's Go Tribe on Twitter. This is an injustice. I don't know when. I don't know. The first time I checked was when we were going back and forth with Andrew Knott about the Angry Hamster nickname. So I'm assuming it was before that. So I don't know why he blocked us. What did you do before I came on board, Jason? Did you insult
him? I'm going to say it was you. I don't think I ever talked about Jose Ramirez enough one way or another for him to have even noticed Let's Go Tribe.
So maybe that's why. You're just disrespecting him by not talking about him. So, Jose Ramirez, I know you listen to the podcast, so this is a personal apology on behalf of Jason screwing up and not talking about you enough. Please follow us.
Please clear my name by identifying what caused you to block the Let's Go Tribe Twitter account so that everyone will know it had nothing to do with me.
Because the main part is there's stuff he tweets that's funny, and I want to retweet it. There was something he deleted, but I can't remember. I wish I could.
Now, if really Chamberlain blocked Let's Go Tribe, that potentially...
that is all you. That is 100% you. But the most important player, of course, in the ALDS, there's no way I'm not going to mention Roberto Perez. We won't talk about games 2 and 3, but game 1, holy cow. He had that big tag in the first or second inning, which, I mean, sort of saved that game. Maybe the series, maybe the...
Let me say this for you. Because you just sound like you're biased because you have a crush on him. Roberto Perez in game 1 was fantastic. The tag he made there was a tremendous play. Obviously, definitely saved one run and might have saved more than one because that inning was off to a really shaky situation. There would have been a guy in scoring position. The inning would have kept going. Boston might have blown the game open right in the first inning. And who knows how anything else plays out. That tag was massive. And oh yes, he also hit a home run that game.
So I'm not biased at all, but he had two of the greatest hits I've ever seen in the game of baseball. and also some of the smartest base running I've ever seen in the 100 years of the sport. No, but he had the two hits and a home run.
First, took second place and kind of, or second base and kind of a routine fly ball, and then was able to score late. He was definitely the player of the game in game 1. And then he drew a couple walks in game 2. I think scored a run in there. He had a good series.
Yeah, this is basically peak Roberto. I think it was Jay that mentioned that. I didn't mean to exactly precisely predict what Roberto Perez would be, but I wrote that he would draw a lot of walks, he would run the bases really well, he would play good defense, and occasionally he would hit a home run, and that's like exactly what he did in the ALDS. So I am very happy with Roberto. I think, would we be okay with getting rid of Chris Jimenez if we ever need a roster spot?
Yeah, that's the thing. I know that, you know, they only played 3 games, and the series could potentially go 7, and... But yeah, they had 3 catchers on the roster, and only one of them played a single pitch of the series. So yeah, I feel like, you know, there was some talk that, you know, Trevor Bauer did his best work with Chris Jimenez, but Jimenez That's actually didn't catch most of Bauer's last half dozen or so starts. So I think that for a while seemed to be true, but it seems like at some point Bauer was able to kind of let go of that.
I think the whole catcher thing is pretty much debunked now because Roberto Perez is catching the other pitchers, and they were pitching really well without Yan Gomes. And
yeah, so I don't. If you don't think any of those catchers are pinch hitters, which I would understand, but yeah, they don't need 3 catchers. So that said, there's not someone I'm like dying to get onto the postseason roster either. But it does seem a little silly to carry 3 catchers and have 2 guys who literally never got on the field during a game.
I think we should give Michael Martinez 2 spots in the roster. He is that important to this season. Just in case, like, something happens with one spot. Like, maybe MLB, like, on November 1st decides we only have 24 spots in the roster. we'll have Michael Martinez in two spots, so we can throw him in the other one.
Bro, I'm going to save my crack about Michael Martinez for a big moment in the game when he's at bat, so he can make me look foolish by getting a big hit.
I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe he'll put that a sick bunt, or he'll bunt for three foul balls in a row. I don't know. One of those two. I don't get it with Michael Martinez. I get that he's the 25th guy and he fits in the clubhouse or whatever, but is there really nobody better they could have used, even if they don't want to use a rookie like Yandy Diaz?
I think the answer is no. I think there's all this hand-wringing about Michael Martinez being on the roster, but there just honestly isn't. Because here we are talking about should we lose one of the catchers, and we both agree they probably should, but there's also no one either of us thinks should really be replacing one of those catchers.
Who would we replace him with? Because, I mean, the other answer would have been Salazar, but...
And Jerry Francona also only used four relievers. So, yeah. Again, I know in a seven-game series, they're going to need more than four relievers. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, they didn't use, like, five or six players on the LDS roster. I don't know. I mean, Martinez is a mild... He's certainly a defensive upgrade over Coco Crisp right now, and that's the way he was used in a couple games.
Yeah.
I certainly, you know, I don't want him up in a big moment in the game. I'd rather they use, you know, Yan Gomes as a pinch hitter. You know, he at least has some track record of being a successful hitter, even if it's mostly a year and a half ago at this point. But I don't know. I can't muster up the energy to flip out about Martinez being on the roster the way a lot of Indians fans are.
Yeah, I don't know about flipping out. I don't get that either. But what was I going to say? Oh, it's... I mean, the whole using four relievers and barely any bench players, I mean, we can kind of say that they were tested in the sense that they had to win, but the roster wasn't tested in this series, which I think it will be in the next one. So that's going to be one big thing, I think. Because it went pretty much as perfect as you could expect playing a really good team. They used Andrew Miller as long as they wanted to, and he was good pretty much every at bat. Cody Allen was good enough. Corey Kluber going seven innings. Trevor Bauer really good. Josh Tomlin really good. I don't think everybody's going to go that well against the Blue Jays. But it did against the Red Sox, and that's all that really matters right now, I guess. But over a seven-game series, are you worried at all about the Indians roster not going quite this perfectly?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always worried. I mean,
that's true. I should never ask you if you're worried. I don't know the answer.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Are you slightly more worried than usual?
No, I'm not. There's no matter what, there's going to be at least four games. So there's an extra game to work with. And most likely the series is going to go more than four games. And most likely they're going to have to use more than four relievers. But they're going to have had a bunch of days off. You know, they're going to have games one and two and then a day off. And then, Francona has shown he's willing to put a lot of innings on his best relievers. And just because it's a longer series doesn't mean that strategy, you know, you can't do that seven games. But you got to think, for better or for worse, a couple of the games are going to be blowouts where you can either get by with, you know, your fifth or sixth reliever because you're already up six runs, and even if you lose a couple of runs, you're still up big. Or, you know, Toronto beats the crap out of Josh Tomlin or something like that, and the Indians are down a bunch, and you just put someone else in to eat some innings and accept that you're going to lose that game. It's unlikely all seven games you're going to be so close you're going to wish you could rely on just those relievers. And if there's five games that are that close, you can depend on just those relievers for five games in the series. So they're going to use more than four relievers. At some point, one of those relievers, and Brian Shaw already did. At some point, Cody Allen or Andrew Miller is probably going to give up a run. But I'm not that worried about it. Toronto's really good. Their offense isn't as good as Boston's, but they've got a really good offense, and we'll get into that in a little bit. And they have more rotation depth than Boston does. But no, I'm for me, somewhat oddly unworried, which is not to say I'm not worried. I'm totally worried. But relative to where I've been at other times in my life as an Indians fan, I'm not as worried as I maybe would have thought I would be.
So we're probably screwed then. I mean,
yeah, probably. And that's what I'm worried about.
It's just an endless circle. So anything else about the ALDS before we move on to the future?
Just to spend a minute on the end of David Ortiz's career. Fantastic player. Never really a guy I liked. And so, petty or not, I took satisfaction in the Indians bringing an end to his career. I can only hope that the next time a player I'm not particularly fond of, who's going on a ridiculous going away tour, that the Indians can also be the team to end that guy's career.
Is this just the beginning of these stupid tours?
No, it's not the beginning. It's been going on for a really long time at this point.
Well, I think we're still. It's only been
more attention than they used to. But Cal Ripken Jr. did all of this stuff.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, I was at his last game at Comiskey against the White Sox, and you know there was a big thing. The media attention on it, I'm sure, is bigger. I think a big part of it is probably just social media. There's a lot more of that stuff than, you know, when Cal Ripken played his last game. That wasn't a factor. I don't know. I think a lot of it is when it's a Yankee or a Red Sox, it gets even more attention, and so it becomes more aggravating.
Yeah. So it's a media thing. I think you're right. But I don't know. They're never going to stop talking about it, I don't think. It's going to get worse and worse, and it's going to be like less and less caliber players retiring just because it's something to talk about and they get a bunch of attention for it.
Well, what I'm looking
forward to... Maybe in 10 years, we'll have Brandon Guyer's retirement tour.
I'm looking forward to the first guy who overplays his hand and announces, like, before the season starts that it's going to be his last season, and then just no one does anything about it. Like, he doesn't get gifts from anyone.
But he's expecting it at every game.
Yeah.
He's up before the game waving to the crowd, and nobody really cares. Yeah. Oh, the other thing...
I'm looking forward to a situation like that. Like, Jimmy Rollins this offseason, like... Next year, my last year, folks, I'm going to be out of here. And then no one is going to do anything for Jimmy Rollins.
Because it's going to happen, I would think. Because for a while, it's going to be no matter who says it, they're going to do a tour. And then they're going to get sick of it. And then it'll be neat to see who the first one is who hits the wall there. So do you have any general thoughts on the TBS broadcast at all? There's a pretty funny Tyler Naquin gaffe in the first one where they said he was the first outfielder the Indians have ever used in the playoffs, which... would explain a lot if it was true, but they meant the first rookie outfielder. They weren't showing pitch counts forever. Their pregame was total garbage. I didn't mind the in-game announcers too much, other than Cal Ripken. But anything that your particular thoughts on them?
I don't mind the broadcast team they had, which is going to be the same team for the ALCS. I don't think they're great. I said this at some point in the comments. I don't think many people are great national baseball announcers. I think, you know, good baseball announcers know their team really, really well. And then, you know, pick up enough about the visiting. And they're also mostly talking to fans of their team, which is a very different dynamic than, you know, trying to broadcast a game nationally. So it's a different job. I don't think very many people are like great national announcers. I think the TBS crew is fine.
Yeah, it just got more annoying hearing people complain about it than the actual announcers, I think.
Yeah. And then in terms of some of the other stuff, I tend not to watch like a lot of pre and post game stuff unless like the Indians just won and then I'll watch the post game just to watch Indians highlights again. The pitch count thing does legitimately annoy me just because it's at this point become such a just normal part of on-screen graphics that when it's missing, I notice it. Mm-hmm. And it's such an easy thing to do that doesn't clutter up the screen or anything like that. And someone was saying like, yeah, don't you have a computer in front of you? You can look at the pitch count whenever you want. It's like, yeah, I have a computer in front of me. I can look at the score anytime I want to. I still prefer that the broadcast have the score on the screen, which of course they do. To me, the pitch count is just like another standard thing to have up there. So I was glad that at some point they obviously heard the complaining and realized they were, you know, being stupid about not having it on there and added it. So for the most part, I've been fine with TBS. You know, I'm not like, ooh, yes, it's on TBS. Awesome. But I'm also not. TBS. I'd probably rather watch it on TBS than Fox.
Oh, yeah. There's no Harold Reynolds. That's the big thing. I will legitimately complain about. But I think the big thing with national announcers is just that they're not going to be able to say anything you've never heard about your own team. So it's never going to sound like a compliment, no matter what they say. Like, you could see people complaining in real time, like... they were constantly talking about how good Josh Tomlin won, because nobody would say anything. But then when you're talking about something about Clay Buchholz, it was just constant complaining about how biased they are towards the Red Sox. It's like all you hear is the stuff about the other team because you're so used to hearing about your team. Like, you're desensitized to it almost.
Yeah, I agree. And like you said, like, nothing they say about your team more than they've had the opportunity to. You've watched so many more innings of your favorite team than they've had the opportunity to. Yeah, one of the weird things I've realized in the last week is that, like, I'm just sort of easily annoyed by fans who say stuff different than I would say, which in some way makes me the bad guy. Like, I'm just not, like, but there's just been tons of complaining. Yes. Complaining about the umps, complaining about the announcers. And I'm just like, oh, shut up. You guys just let it go. Just watch the game. So, yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of the so-and-so is, you know, like the jokes about like Keith Law hates all 30 teams. Every fan base thinks, you know, national guys hate their team. No, they don't. You just, like you said, you're just so in tune with your own team that hearing someone else talk about it just sounds different. And you think the worst of it.
Yeah. And I don't even know the end goal of complaining about broadcasters or umpires. Just somebody says, yeah, and that's it.
Well, yeah, like sometimes it's something funny that you're complaining about. And then it's sort of like, fine. You know, you're having a good laugh about the joke.
Like the Naquin thing. It's just that.
But yeah, just like the nonstop, like, oh, they're so biased against Cleveland. And it's like, oh, get over it. I feel like I thought the Cavs winning the championship was supposed to take the small man complex away from Cleveland sports fans. But I don't feel like it really did.
I don't know how many championships that would take. I think at least every major team in Cleveland would have been one.
I hope it's not like 3 weeks. We get to find out if 2 is the number of championships it takes.
Oh, look at you. Was that a guaranteed World Series from Jason Lucar?
Oh, that most certainly was not. The Indians could be up 3-0 in the World Series and 6-0 in the 8th inning of Game 4, and I would not be willing to guarantee they were going to win the World Series.
We should also point out that both of us picked the Red Sox the World Series to win the World Series in our last episode. Probably good time to mention that, so. Who cares what we say anyway?
No one. Literally no one.
Except for Jose Ramirez, who is a confirmed listener of the show.
He doesn't care what I say. He cares about something you or someone else associated with the site said.
So anyway, on to the ALCS. The Indians are going to be taking on the Blue Jays. The regular season, you have a post coming up pretty soon about how the whole... We don't have to get too much into it because it's coming, but...
But yeah, the gist of it, the Indians... Yeah. Blue Jays regular season series this year was pretty great. There was the 19-inning game and the Tyler Naquin walk inside the park walk-off home run were both against the Blue Jays. So that's, you know, arguably the two most memorable games of the season, both against Toronto.
Yeah. And the rotations, we just learned today it's going to be Kluber, Bauer, Tomlin, and then Clevinger? Mostly probably a bullpen day type of thing. And Danny Salazar probably will not be available for the AC or ALCS. On the Blue Jays side of things, they're going to have Estrada, Happ, Sanchez, Stroman, Liriano. He had a concussion. He might be available for like a game 2 start or maybe a little later. Game 1 we know is going to be 8 o'clock on Friday. Game 2 and 3 we just learned. Game 2 is on 4 o'clock on Saturday. And game 3, 8 o'clock in Canada on Monday. What are your general thoughts on this series coming up?
Well, it's, you know, it's another good team. You know, I think on the whole, when you look at the numbers, having home field, I think is significant. The projections I've looked at all have the Blue Jays as a pretty slight favorite in the series. I was looking at 538 silver site, and they've got Blue Jays at 53% to 47% for the Indians. So that's pretty close to a toss up though. So on paper, it should be a really competitive series. The pitching, I'm a little surprised to see Estrada starting game 1. I feel like I'm missing a piece of information that explains why they'd be going with him.
I was just reading it. I don't know. Have they confirmed that? I was just reading it in an order.
Yeah, no, that's what I saw. He's listed as the game 1. What I've looked at has him listed as game 1 and doesn't have anyone in particular listed for the other games. I mean, I look at their pitchers, J.A. Happ, who, you know, won 20 games, not that that's super significant, but had a 3.18 ERA, and Aaron Sanchez, who slowed down a little bit at the end of the year, so that's worth mentioning, but had a 3.0 ERA, and then Estrada was at 3.48, so it's not like he's way far behind them, but his FIP was also the highest of those three, so he doesn't feel like he's, you know, one of their top two starters, and... So I'm a little surprised he's starting game 1, but I guess I'm happy he's starting game 1 since I don't think he's one of their two best pitchers. He's a good pitcher. They have a good rotation. I don't think any of their guys are quite as good as Rick Porcello or David Price, and the Indians obviously were able to get to those two guys. But the rotation top to bottom for Toronto has more depth. There's not going to be the Clay Buchholz, you know, guy who looks like a weak link in the chain for them in the rotation.
Yeah, I think I just saw... I didn't get a chance to write it down. I just saw it when I was scrolling through stuff. But the Blue Jays are like the first team to have their bullpen lose 30 games and still make it in the playoffs. So if the Indians get to the bullpen, I think that'll be pretty okay. Just any way to get there. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. 30 games they lost from their bullpen alone.
Yeah, I mean, in looking at their bullpen, you know, they've been using Liriano in relief a couple times near the end of the season. And then he got hit by that comebacker in their series against Texas. I think they expect him to be cleared for the ALCS, although something I read today said he'd be cleared to join the team Saturday. So he might not be on the team for game one, but then, but I think he'd be used as a reliever and give them another lefty. And Roberto Osuna, their closer, was really good for most of the season. But he did not look great near the end of the season, which doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, you know, going into the postseason. But yeah, Boston's bullpen, I think, is pretty much as good as the Indians. Maybe the Indians' bullpen's a little better at the end of the year just because they're willing to use Andrew Miller for so many important innings. But on the whole, Boston's bullpen, I feel like, is pretty much the equal of Cleveland's. Toronto's bullpen, I don't think, is the equal. And I just pulled up Osuna's numbers. In the last 2 weeks of the season, he had three games where he gave up multiple runs. And a number of other games where he kind of worked around, you know, multiple base runners. So he has not been especially sharp. And I know that's a small sample, but if you're going to look at a small sample, the most recent, I think, is the most reasonable one to look at. I don't know if he's wearing out. But yeah, like you said, if the Indians can get into their bullpen, there should be opportunities to do some late inning damage.
Yeah. And the problem is getting to the bullpen, obviously. I don't know. It's going to come up in a question later, so we can talk about it a little bit now. But they have the sinker baller in Sanchez, who you said he kind of waned off in the season. J.A. Happ gets a lot of ground balls, too. The Indians aren't going to be able to use a lot of power. I don't know if they're going to hit that many home runs in this series. Do you think at all, really?
I mean, I'm sure they'll hit some home runs. But, yeah, I don't think they're going to, you know, be hitting three home runs a night.
Yeah. If we were just going to do some stupid keys to the series besides score more runs and don't let them score runs, I think I have two kind of clear ones. The first one is just run. I posted earlier today about maybe it isn't Russell Martin's arm after Jordan Bastin's tweet about release time. The Blue Jays pitchers are really slow at getting the ball out, and then Martin's thrown out like 11 of 61 potential base stealers. And the Indians, of course, lead the AL in base stealing, so just steal a lot of bases if you can. I don't know when Rajai Davis will be in, but if he can get on base, that's going to be big, I think. Then another one is just kind of an anecdotal thing, is try to not have an elimination game in Toronto. It just seems like that place always goes nuts. I would not be comfortable down 3 anything in Toronto. I don't know about you.
Well,
but
I mean, yeah, and the thing about that, if there's an elimination game in Toronto, the Indians are either down 3-0 or down 3-1. So you don't want to be down 3-0 or 3-1 no matter where you're going to be playing. So, yeah, I agree that you don't want an elimination game in Toronto. And you're right, though. It gets loud there. I think their fans in the last year or two have developed a reputation for being semi out of control at big games. And their series against Texas, beers were thrown at
Baltimore.
Wild card game against Baltimore.
Yeah. That guy turned himself in too.
Did he?
Yeah. After they found him, he was an editor for some site, but he turned himself in. I don't remember what actually happened.
Is that because he's not any longer?
I don't know. He is / was an editor for some site. Maybe not now. I don't know.
And then the other side of the game, the Indians can score runs off the bullpen if they can get to it. So one, they got to get to it, and two, they need to have not given up like 8 runs by the time they get to it. Toronto's offense, again, not as good as Boston's, but they've got a lot of really dangerous hitters. Josh Donaldson has been probably the second best player in baseball over the last 2 years, behind only Mike Trout. Won the MVP last year, and he'll finish in the top 5 again this year. Maybe top 3. Edwin Encarnacion, who hit 42 home runs this year. Jose Bautista, who had kind of a down year, but is still a really big hitter and has had a couple big hits for them already this postseason. Troy Tulowitzki, not as good as he used to be, but still a good player. Russell Martin's a good hitter. They've got a tough lineup, kind of a top-heavy lineup. The bottom of their lineup isn't especially intimidating. One of the things about Boston is their lineup just sort of didn't let up. So Toronto's, there's a little room to breathe, although we saw Coco Crisp hit a home run over the Green Monster, so you should never breathe too easy in the playoffs. But the heart of Toronto's order is really, really good. Maybe arguably even better than Boston's heart of the order. So there's going to be a lot of tense innings when someone gets on base and the next three players up are all really scary hitters.
Yeah, I don't like you said, the Blue Jays offense is overall worse than the Red Sox, but I think they have kind of an offense that matches up better against the Indians because of all the home runs, because obviously we say it every time, but Tomlin, Bauer, Clevinger, they all give up a lot of home runs. So it's a little worrying, just all those power hitters that they have. I like Jose Bautista the bat flips, but I don't want to see any.
They're very right-handed heavy. Mm-hmm. Donaldson, Encarnacion, Bautista, Tulowitzki, Martin, they're all right-handed hitters. They've got Justin Smoke is a switch hitter, and Michael Saunders, one of their outfielders, is a left-handed hitter. But all their big hitters are righty. So, I mean, Andrew Miller can get anyone out, but, you know, there's some concern in the Boston series about they've got a lot of really good lefties, and Miller can't pitch to all of them. He can only pitch to each of them once or whatever. That threat doesn't really exist with Toronto, so at least there's that.
And it's super stupid small sample sizes, but the Blue Jays have gotten to Andrew Miller pretty well overall, 16 for 67 in their careers. I mean, it's still really small, but what is all the 7 home runs altogether in that time? He's walked 9 of them, only struck out 18. So again, it's really small, but compared to how much Andrew Miller dominates everybody else, that right-handed heavy lineup might be a little bit of trouble for him, I think.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. They scored a lot of runs against the Indians in the games they played this year, in part because they scored like 17 of them in one game. But Josh Donaldson had a huge year against the Indians. Troy Tulowitzki was really good against the Indians. They're a top heavy lineup. But the heavy part of that lineup is very heavy.
Would you call... I'm trying to think of any other teams before I ask this question. I don't think so. Between the series between the Indians and Blue Jays in the regular season, no matter what happens in the postseason, would you call it the best matchup, the Indians, just the most exciting one to watch? I can't think of another one that had so many great games as this one did.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, like, they played 7 games against each other, and, you know, I think, like, 5 of the 7 were one-run games. The Indians got destroyed the game after the marathon. Yeah. But other than that, the games were all close. And, a lot of big moments, big hits for both teams. I know TVS isn't thrilled about it because the Indians have no fans and the Blue Jays play in Canada where the games aren't aired on TVS. Objectively, if you didn't know anything about big markets, you didn't know who were superstars, things like that, I think it should be a fun series. It would be a fun series to watch without any rooting interest so that you don't have to be super stressed out the whole time. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm glad the Indians are in it. I'm glad I have a rooting interest. But sometimes two teams are playing, and if you don't care about either of them, it's like, I don't want to watch this game. I feel like if you're not an Indians or a Blue Jays fan, this would still be a compelling series.
Yeah, a small part of me misses, a very, very small part, misses not knowing I'm going to be stressed out in a couple days, because I love playoff anything, like playoff finale, anything. But when the Indians are in it or any of my teams, it's just so stressful to watch. Like, every single time a ball moves, I'm dying. So did you watch any other series at all?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a job that requires me to get up reasonably early, so I'm not staying up till like midnight to watch a game that the Indians aren't in, at least not until like the World Series. So the LDS games that are like the late games, I didn't stay up and watch the ending of all those. But otherwise, I watched a pretty good amount of baseball. I'm pretty up to speed on what's been going on. Because again, there's not going to be any significant baseball for a while after the next 3 weeks. So I'll fit in whatever I can get in the meantime.
Yeah, normally at this time of the year when the Indians aren't in it, I always... Because by the end of a losing season, it kind of drags on. It's like, okay, I'm done now. But then I get really excited about baseball again in the postseason, and then the season's over. But this year has been exciting all year long, so I think it'll still be fulfilling at the end when it's over. But I was watching, what was it, the Dodgers and their bullpen usage? It's painful after what Terry Francona did. I don't know how much of that game you watched, but just leaving people in too long. And
last night, who brought in 5 different relief pitchers before getting 2 outs in the 9th, their bullpen. I do not feel the smallest bit bad for Giants fans because they've gotten to watch their team win the World Series three times this decade. But if you could isolate that from just what's gone on in the last, like, 3 months for the Giants, they had the best record in baseball at the All-Star break. They had a better record than the Cubs at the All-Star break. Their bullpen in the second half was just, like, shockingly bad. And so the way they ended up losing last night was, like, the least surprising way they could possibly have lost. Their bullpen couldn't hold a three-run lead in the ninth inning despite 17 different pitchers being brought in. None of them could get anything done.
Yep. Yeah, that was a fun series to watch overall. I didn't watch much of the
other tomorrow night. By the time this is up, two nights, there's going to be game five between the Dodgers and Nationals. And I love a game like that. That it's a big game, huge game for both teams. I don't have a massive rooting interest in. I can just, like, hope for good baseball and cool stuff to happen.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the wild card game, probably more than I think a lot of people are, but game five eliminations or game seven eliminations are so much more exciting because there's already the history of everything that's happened and it all kind of comes to this one thing. I love elimination anything pretty much.
Yep.
And it's kind of neat, speaking of other teams and their rooting interests, everyone wants the Indians to win. Other than, I think I've seen, like, the Twins. Twinkie Town doesn't want the Indians to win because, I mean, it's Indians, but other than, like, rivals, I know a lot of Yankees fans want the Indians to win because of Andrew Miller, and everybody else wants the Indians to win because of the underdog. And
I mean, our sister sites, Over the Monster, the Red Sox site, and Maccabi Chronicles, the Giants site, both had, like, now that our team is out, who should we cheer for? And both of them picked the Indians.
Yeah, well, Pinstripe Alley just straight up wrote a post that they're cheering for the Indians because we have Andrew Miller. So they love that guy. I can't blame
him. Rightfully so. I mean, I feel like any Indians fan who was, like, bothered by the trade at the time, at this point, can't even really remember, like, wait, what? No, it's fine. Whatever, we gave up. What? No, I don't care. Like, take all of our prospects. Just let us have Andrew Miller.
He's such a natural fit. It doesn't feel like Brandon. I know Brandon Guyer was traded for. It's very clear. It doesn't feel like he's been there forever. But Andrew Miller just seems like he's been an Indian. It's already hard to imagine. Maybe it's because he grew a beard after getting traded. I don't know what it is, but he just feels like he's always been an Indian already, and I can't wait for, like, two more years of this.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. He's under contract for two more years, so.
And so was Guyer, too, on that note.
Yeah.
Ryan Rayburn 2.0 with defense, and it's great. So anything else about ALCS, other DS games, anything like that, before we move on to social media questions?
No. Depending on how the series goes, we'll maybe podcast again in the middle of the series, and but no, like, in terms of looking ahead of it, on paper, they're evenly matched teams. It should be a good series.
Yep. So I would say Thursday, but now whenever the hell we record, I'm going to ask out questions for Twitter and Facebook. You can always also email us, send us any kind of message for a question that you want us to answer. We usually get a good amount of them. We try to answer as many as possible. This week we've got almost all of them are based on the ALDS or ALCS, I should say. But the first one is a little unique. I figured since it's history, I would let you do all the research for this one. So basically,
as the person who lived through everything we're about to talk about,
as the 80-year-old on this podcast, Nancy Holes on Facebook, she wants to know, how did Francisco Lindor's first two seasons statistically compare to the first two seasons of Omar Vizquel? Which, of course, everybody loves Omar Vizquel. It's kind of like an old lady thing at this point. I guess it's because a lot of them, they were like our age when Omar was big. But yeah, I think Lindor's taken over his spot. Not taken over it, but he's in the process of taking over the spot everyone's going to love as they get older and they're going to remember fondly about him. So how does it compare, Jason?
He's better than Omar Vizquel was. I mean, first, let's just take a look at Lindor's numbers for his first two seasons. He played in 257 games, which matches up pretty well with Omar Vizquel, who played in 224 games in his first two seasons. But Lindor, through those two seasons, has a .306 batting average, a .356 on base percentage, .454 slugging, and his OPS plus is .111. Omar Vizquel, in his first two seasons, hit .231 with a .281 on base percentage, a .276 slugging percentage, and an OPS plus of .57. So by OPS plus, Francisco Lindor has almost literally been twice as good a hitter as Vizquel was. And of course, there's the defense.
Which is ridiculous.
The defense, you know, looking at all of the advanced metrics, they rate out pretty close. But again, Lindor's defensive numbers are better.
Is it really that close, though?
Lindor's also a year younger than Omar Vizquel was during his first two seasons. It's worth pointing out, because I think a lot of Indians fans don't realize this or have forgotten this, Omar Vizquel's first two seasons were not with the Indians. His first five seasons weren't with the Indians. He was with the Mariners at the beginning of his career before he came over. Honestly, Francisco Lindor's first two seasons put together, and I say this even though, I mean, Lindor didn't even play all of last year. His first 1 2/3 seasons are as good as the two best seasons of Omar Vizquel's career.
Wow.
Which does not mean Lindor is necessarily going to have a better career. Vizquel was a good player for a really long time. He was still, when he was 39 with the Giants, was still a well above average player. So Lindor's got a ways to go to catch him. But yeah, Francisco Lindor has already, with his first two seasons, bested Omar Vizquel's two best seasons.
That's amazing. There you go, Nancy. So basically really good. He compares very well to Omar. I think other than something going off the rails, we can kind of say Lindor's probably going to pass Omar, right?
I mean, his peak is going to be better than Omar's no matter what. In terms
we
of
can't tell
value,
how
Lindor's, you know, going to have to play like another 7 or 8 years to catch his career value. So yeah, Lindor needs to play above average baseball until he's 30, and he'll definitely, even if he's never again as good as he was this year, he's above average till he's 30, he'll have had a better career than Omar Vizquel.
Yep. So next question. Chris Pulliam on Facebook asks, what potential World Series opponent do the Indians match up against the best? Do you have an answer in mind after just hearing it, or do you want me to go first?
I have an answer in mind. I would tend to think we're going to agree, but since I just babbled about the first question, I'll let you go first.
I'm saying Nationals just because they're beat up. Basically in the same boat as the Indians. It's either, at this point, it's the Cubs, Nationals, or Dodgers. I think Cubs and Dodgers are really good. The Nationals are just beat up at this point. If they don't get eliminated tomorrow, I think if somehow they make it to the World Series, the Indians could take them pretty easily. What about
you? Well, I won't go so far as to say I think the Indians could take anyone pretty easily.
Yeah. Compared to the Cubs and Dodgers.
Nationals would be the best matchup. Them being banged up is a big part of that. Steven Strasburg might not be able to get back this season. And if he does, who knows how effective he's going to be.
Well, he had a setback, so probably not. It's looking worse and worse.
That's an interesting matchup in that they have Max Scherzer. The Indians have Corey Kluber. And then they've got some injuries. The Indians have some injuries. You know, they've got some good hitters. I think that's a pretty good matchup. I do think the Indians are a little better than the Nationals. I think on paper that would be a pretty close matchup, and I think that would be the best matchup for the Indians. And, you know, like you said, they could be eliminated tomorrow night, but they've got Scherzer going tomorrow, and the Dodgers have Rich Hill, who's been pretty good, but isn't Max Scherzer good. So they'll be in Washington. At this point, the Nationals are the favorite to win that game. I think the Cubs are going to beat the Nationals or whoever they play. But yeah, I think the Nationals are the three teams that are left as we're speaking would be the best matchup.
Yep. At DHaynes1 on Twitter wants to know, your predictions for a surprise breakout performance from both teams. So I looked up a little bit for this already, so I'll take this one first. So for the Indians, I'm going to say Mike Napoli. He hasn't been great in the playoffs so far. He's 2-for-12. I was going to say he was not great in August, but he's been surprisingly pretty good. September, he was bad. So this series, I think, is going to be the one where he asserts himself in the playoff run one way or another. Either it's just a couple big home runs or a bunch of home runs. I think this is finally where Mike Napoli is going to pay off in the postseason. I hope, anyway. I would like, of all the Indians players, even though he's been here for less than a year, he's one of the biggest ones I want to just suddenly come out and be great in the playoffs, just because of how much everybody already loves him and the whole party in Napoli's thing. And for the Blue Jays, for a very important reason, I'm going to say Justin Smoke, just so my 2010 Justin Smoke Mariners jersey can be relevant. I want him to be great for a series. Maybe I can dig it out of the closet.
Sometime this offseason, when we don't have actual baseball to discuss, we can discuss why on earth you have a Justin Smoke 2010 Mariners jersey.
Okay. We'll leave that out there for now.
Players, on the Toronto side, I'll say, I mean, I don't know if Troy Tulowitzki counts. Like, he's been a star player, but he's not great anymore. He's not having a, you know, he's having a good but not great season. If he counts, I guess I would say him.
I would count.
If you've got to go farther down, Russell Martin seems the kind of player to aggravate me with coming up with a lot of big hits. And the Indian side, I don't know. Like, Jose Ramirez doesn't count. He's too good at this point.
See, it's really difficult on the Indians, isn't it? I kind of landed on Napoli because I circled through everybody else.
Right. And, I mean, a Napoli hit like 30-some home runs this year. So it's like a weird... I mean, I guess if we're not talking about... I mean, the Indians don't have an offensive superstar. So I guess on some level, any of their hitters, you know, kind of count as whoever has the best series can be identified. It's not like, well, of course Barry Bonds had a good season. He's Barry Bonds. But they don't have anyone quite like that. I'll say Jose Ramirez then. I mean, he's been so good lately. So he wouldn't be like a big shock player, but and if I'm picking a shock player, I guess I'm saying I think Michael Martinez is gonna hit a single at some point. But I think Jose Ramirez is gonna have the best series offensively for the Indians.
I would love that. I love every time announcers talk about Jose Ramirez and are surprised by how good he's been. That happened multiple times in the ALDS.
And Jose, where either
they were just looking at something he recently did or altogether.
If you're listening, Jose, you can unblock Let's Go Tribe now.
Jason doesn't run it anymore. All those mean things he said, I won't let him say them again. You can unblock us.
If I ever meet him, I'm going to ask him now, like, hey, why did you block Let's Go Tribe? And he's going to be like, oh, there's this guy, Matt, and man. I'd be like, oh, say no more.
And then you retweet it and make it your background image and just everybody can see and do it.
One of my favorite is a random moment that has nothing to do with baseball, but random moment. I think it was game three and Jose was sitting in the dugout watching the game, yes. His hat and helmet off. And was it Carrasco?
Yep.
It was Carlos Carrasco was just like, combing his hair for him. And that was a moment I really enjoyed.
I don't know what that was. Jose was still watching the game. It wasn't like he was doing anything. He was just sitting there and Carrasco was fluffing up his hair. The announcers mentioned, I mean, shut up. But they were saying, don't get ready for the post-game interview already. Like, shut up. But I guess that's what he was doing, just in case. But he would have put his helmet on again, so it wouldn't have made sense. I don't know. That was just great. Maybe he just wanted his hair fluffed in between innings. Who knows?
It probably feels good to have your hair fluffed.
Yeah. I haven't had hair for a few years, so I wouldn't know, but I'm sure it feels great. Thanks, Jason.
I'm running my fingers through my hair right now, and it does feel pretty good.
I can get hair around the sides if I wanted to, so it still counts. I can just look like... Have you ever seen a baby when they're... Some babies, they don't grow hair on the top of their head.
Exactly what you're talking about.
It's the best. Anyway. Next question. At Random Man. There we go. Will Cleveland drown out the traveling Blue Jays fans this weekend?
Oh, that's a valid question. I was in Cleveland for one of those games in August. Unfortunately, not the one that featured the Inside the Park run. There were a ton of Toronto fans there, and they were obnoxious as all get out. So I don't know the answer to that. I would like to think that Indians fans bought all the tickets initially.
Tickets sold out right away.
So I would like to think there weren't a lot of Blue Jays. And boy, I would really like to think a bunch of people haven't sold their tickets on the secondhand market. There will be some Blue Jays fans there, hopefully. But my gosh, it can't be anything like it was in August. It was I haven't been to that many games in Cleveland, but I mean, I've seen them play the Red Sox there, and there were dramatically more Blue Jays fans this August than there were Red Sox fans when I saw them play Boston, you know, 5 years ago or so.
I think the fact that hockey's starting is a legitimate reason that maybe it'll help a little bit. I know the Blue Jays in the postseason, but how many, especially with, I don't know if you follow hockey at all, but it was Austin Matthews, the Maple Leafs, they drafted him first pick. He had like 4 goals tonight. So for once, Canadian hockey fans have something to cheer about. So maybe they already forgot about the Blue Jays. And maybe they won't want to go to an Indians game. So
true. I guess the counterfact to that is the Browns will play at some point. So who knows what Cleveland fans will be doing.
Because all those great Cleveland players
Sunday's a travel day. There's no game on Sunday. The Indians won't assuming the Browns aren't playing on Monday Night Football or something like that, I wouldn't know. But they won't
Who
have to.
Who would schedule the Browns on Monday Night Football?
Well, that's how I don't know. Fired.
They're only on Thursday night because every team has to be on Thursday night game. Next question. At Metro Marsh, he wants to know, how many homers does each team hit in the series? We could do this one of two ways. You could do total, or you could do like per game, what you think. Because if you're doing total, you have to also have to guess how many games. So how many per game do you think each team will have just about?
Per game is weird, though, because now we got to get it like in like decimal fractions. I'm just going to go total. Okay. I will say the Blue Jays will hit 9 home runs, and the Indians will hit 7 home runs. And you can infer I'm expecting a series that doesn't just go 4 or 5 games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about it. I was saying the Blue Jays will hit, because like some people, I did per game. I was saying like maybe just the 2 home runs are just a shade under 2 games, or 2 home runs a game. And the Indians will be like half a home run per game lower. So they hit not a significant amount less, but yeah, it's because
if the series goes like 6 games, that's pretty close.
Probably about the same. Yeah, because Bauer, Tomlin, Clevenger, obviously home runs, and they have Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista.
Yeah, I mean, during the regular season, hey, and I mentioned Russell Martin in here. I just looked up. He hit 3 home runs against the Indians this year, which doesn't have any real predictive value. And then Encarnacion, Smoke, Tulowitzki, Donaldson, and Melvin Upton each hit 2 home runs.
Yep.
So that's 13 home runs they hit in those 7 games, all by the same 6 players. Jose Bautista... Yeah. What I'm looking at, Jose Bautista didn't even play against the Indians this year. I know he missed some games. I didn't realize he missed all of both series that the two teams played. But Jose Bautista did not play against the Indians this year.
Must have been scared. That's why.
You said
now, if he listens to the podcast, he's going to be motivated. Damn it! What did I do? I know he listens because of course he does.
And he doesn't block anyone on Twitter, so
he will just confront you on Twitter. Okay, last question. Very important. Matt McPhee on Facebook wants to know, what are Jonathan Lucroy's favorite off-season hobbies? I said sitting on a cool mattress, crying, and regretting.
I'm going to go the wet blanket route and say appreciating the fact that he had some small amount of control over I didn't want to bring it up before because I know you're taking a lot of pleasure in it, but the Jonathan Lucroy bashing is another thing that at some point in the last few days I reached my limit for, and I don't need to listen to Indians fans talk about Jonathan Lucroy anymore. We've outlasted him. We've beaten him. At this point, he can be beneath us. We don't need to be bothered by making fun of him anymore. We have Roberto Perez. Who cares about Jonathan Lucroy?
Did you at least see Lucroy's last tweet, which was kind of unfortunate for him and funny for everyone else?
I did not. I do not.
Like the last thing he did before like going dark for the playoffs was he tweeted on a mattress, like saying, thanks for the cool mattress, company. So now his last thing is just like him sitting on a mattress playing a video game, which is probably what he's doing in the offseason. It's just kind of funny considering I really went out. But how do you not like Jonathan Lucroy bashing? It's fun.
It feels like small man stuff to me again. It was funny for a while. And I even retweeted like someone had a joke that I thought was really funny. But yeah, I don't know. At this point, I'm happy that he's not in the team. I like the team the way it is. I don't really like Jonathan Lucroy outside of him being a good player. So I don't know why you hate Roberto Perez so much that you have to continue to harp on the fact that we're stuck with him as the catcher. Really, that's what this comes down to.
That is straight libel right there. I can sue you for that.
Well, I would use all of your Jonathan Lucroy bashing as evidence that you badly want him on the team.
I wanted Lucroy as the first baseman DH, obviously, because that's what he would play if he was on the Indians.
Well, now you're telling Mike Napoli you said that. He's going to block Let's Go Tribe. You're not going to be invited to the party.
Just me and LaCroix will be the only ones on Twitter talking to each other now. I don't want to go to the party anyway. So that's our Twitter. That's all the questions we have. Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. I don't really ask anywhere else. We never get emails, but that's what we got. And you know, I don't ask in the comments because I know people just answer them anyway. People don't see them on Twitter. So we get a chance to answer them before the people do. In case anybody ever wondered why we don't ask. I did it the first time I asked, like, I think when I posted the one podcast, I asked for questions there, but people would ask them and then other people would answer them and there was no point. So that's why we don't do it there. So anything interesting coming up for you before you're going to be constantly clenched for the playoffs?
No, I've got to get through 2 work days. I'll watch game 5 tomorrow and then I'll stress out for 4 to 7 games. or four to 14 games.
Yeah. Wait, 4 to 4? Oh, yeah. Hopefully. Kind of blanked on what you meant there. So do you watch hockey at all or no?
No. In the hockey playoffs are going on, like, I'll sometimes put a game on while I'm doing something else. I will watch 0 minutes of regular season hockey. The playoffs will roll around and I'll be like, actually, what will happen is Jaromír Jágr will still be playing. And I'll be like, ah, see, I still know hockey. Because Jaromír Jágr, 20,000 years later, is still playing somehow for reasons I don't really understand.
There's a basketball version of him, but I can't think of who it is. It's somebody where every year I'm surprised he's playing. Is it Vince Carter? Is he still playing?
I don't think so. And Vince Carter has not been around. Even if he is, Jaromír Jágr legitimately was playing in the 1991 Stanley Cup Finals when you were like 3 months old or something like that.
That would have been one. Yeah, Vince Carter still plays. He's on the Grizzlies.
Right. Fair enough.
He's my every year. I'm like, oh, Vince Carter still plays? Yeah. But I'm the same boat as you with Jágr, too. I haven't followed hockey close lately, but every year, even when I don't follow it, I notice Jaromír Jágr is playing because he's just so damn old. Yeah. I don't have anything interesting either. Just going to be watching the Indians, hopefully winning. Yeah. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you either in between the ALCS or afterwards, depending on how quickly it goes. See you then.